This is episode number 73 of the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to eliminate public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on fearless presentations, Doug Stannert.
Welcome to the Fearless Presentations Podcast. I'm Doug Stannert, CEO of the Leaders Institute and Fearless Presentations. And this is the podcast that helps people just like you become confident and poised presenters and speakers. Now, this is podcast number 73. And on this episode, I'm going to cover seven qualities of a good public speaker that every presenter should really know and really emulate. For that matter, you know. So what are the most important qualities of a good public speaker? What makes a great presenter? What makes a great public speaker? And in fact, what are the qualities that allow one orator to get up in front of an audience and just mesmerize the crowds while other people just fail? Well, you know, science may offer an answer to some of these questions. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and identify seven really key qualities that I've kind of noticed as a public speaking coach. And then I'm going to use science to kind of back it up. Some of the scientific studies that have come out in the last few years to kind of show you why these things work so well. By the way, when I first started teaching the Fearless Presentations classes, I did so because I knew that from my own personal experience anyway, that the more self-confident a presenter appeared to be in front of an audience, the more respect that audience would have for that presenter. So in addition, one of the things that I did was in the first chapter of the Fearless Presentations book, I talked about ways to reduce public speaking fear. In the second chapter, I talked about enthusiasm and energy. So those are two of the top three things anyway. And after, you know, over the last 20 years or so that I've been doing this, myself and my instructors, we've worked with over 20,000 presenters, and we've had some of the folks that have come through the classes that have a real natural presence in front of a group. Most of us, though, when we get started, we have to develop that public speaking skill in order to be perceived as a great public speaker. So basically what the items that we're going to cover today are some of those things that we've identified that even if you don't think of yourself as being a fantastic speaker yet, if you emulate these qualities in when you get up to speak, you're going to be a much, much, much better speaker, and folks are going to like you more. So let's kind of talk about the seven items. Number one is self-confidence. So in fact, one of the things I've said for years is that people judge your competence by the confidence that you show. So, the very first time that I kind of figured this out was when I was fairly young in business. I had I'd graduated from college. I was working for an oil company out in West Texas, and I noticed that we were sitting around at a staff meeting, and we were talking about a specific challenge, a specific problem that I knew the answer to. I mean, I had worked with a different company when I was in college on an internship. That company had the exact same problem that we were talking about. And I was thinking, you know, I should speak up. I should say something. And I hesitated. You know, it was one of those things where I just kind of hesitated. And I kicked myself later because the woman who was sitting like two people down from me, she spoke up and she gave the boss the same exact idea that I had. And I was like, oh, man, I should have said something. I should have jumped in there. You know, what was interesting, though, is when I left the oil business, because when I was there, oil was just going in the crapper. So the price of oil had gone down to like $60 a barrel. And since I was the last guy that got hired, I knew that my career wasn't really secure. So I ended up going into a totally different industry. I ended up going into sales. And about 2 years later, I went back to that same company that I had worked for, you know, 2.5 years prior, just to say hi to friends. And of the 300 people that were in that building that did what I did, only three of them were left. So there were three out of 300. They laid off 297 people. Well, 296 because I quit, but still they laid off 296 people. in that 2 year period of time. And one of the people that was left was that lady that was sitting two people down from me. And I'm like, ah, man, wow, what an opportunity. So keep that in mind as the self-confidence that we have when we present, we're showing that we're competent. We're showing that we're capable. So back in 2016, a researcher named Noah Zandon, his company is called Quantified Communications. He decided to do a fairly extensive study where he examined the behaviors of over 100,000 presenters. And the reason why he was doing this is he wanted to rank the importance of the different communication variables that he saw within speakers. And one of the conclusions that he came to was that, and I'll just kind of quote him because this is not something I can do from memory, but he says, your audience equates your competence with the perceptions of your confidence. So it's very similar to what I've been saying for years and years and years. And in fact, in an article that was published by Stanford University, the article is actually called Big Data Approach to Public Speaking. And in that, this same person, Zandon, cites studies by educational researchers that suggest that approximately 83% of human learning occurs visually. So your nonverbal behavior, such as stance, gestures, eye contact, all of those things are really critical, not only to conveying and reinforcing your message, but they also serve as the foundation for the audience's assessment of your confidence. So basically what he's saying there is that your audience looks at the way that you present, not just listens to the things that you say, to figure out if you really know what the heck you're talking about. And if you look self-confident, then they're going to be more likely to trust that you are an expert on the topic. So how exactly do you build self-confidence as a public speaker? Well, in the Fearless Presentations class, one of the things that we help participants do is we have them achieve a series of presentation successes, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And when you stack that series of successes in a very short period of time, especially, it will help build your self-confidence. And by the way, anytime that you have a failure during the learning process, you're going to lose confidence. So that's one of the reasons why a class is really a good way to help you build your confidence as a speaker. So self-confidence is number one. The second thing is that we identified is what I call poise under pressure. Now, for the first few years that I was a public speaking coach, I always just used the phrases self-confidence and poise. I used them interchangeably. In fact, I thought they were synonyms. And it wasn't until just recent years that I've started to realize that poise is just a little bit different than confidence. Poise, it's more of a calm under pressure. The way that I like to describe it is the ability to stay in control when stress increases. So when your stress goes up, when pressure gets put on, if you can remain in control, if you can still look poised, then you're a lot of times you're seen as being confident and in control, that kind of thing. So in contrast, that self-confidence that we talked about a few minutes ago, that's what occurs when the fear has been diminished as a result of the poise that we've expressed in past situations. If you think about the real difference between the two, I mentioned in the self-confidence one that the way to increase your self-confidence is to have a series of successes. And when you do, if you do something 10 times, the 11th time is pretty easy, right? So what poise is what happens that first time, that first time that you will go out and do something. Are you going to have the courage? Are you going to have the poise to be able to perform even though you're feeling nervous? So back in 2011, a person called Taylor Clark, wrote an entire book about the science behind this phenomenon. And the book is actually called Nerve: Poise Under Pressure, Serenity Under Stress, and Brave New Science of Fear and Cool. I know that's really long. It's a really long title. And if you go to the show notes, I'll link to it and you can kind of pull it up on Amazon if you want to. But in the book, Clark explains that most people focus entirely on trying to eliminate the fear in a process. And the big deal about that, though, is that if you aren't feeling the fear, then you're really not growing. So by the way, I there was a post just recently that I did on this, or not only a post, but also a podcast called Why Do I Still Feel Nervous? I think it was last week. So that podcast that I did last week, if you're interested in learning more about that, that's a good one to kind of start with. But basically, what you want to learn about poise and fear is it's a powerful motivator if you use it correctly. So instead of avoiding situations where you're going to feel fear, you want to embrace those situations. You want to use them as a way to improve yourself. You want to face these situations with poise, and your audience is going to respect you a great deal as a result of that. So those two things are very similar, self-confidence and poise, but they're actually two. It's kind of like the two sides of the same coin kind of thing. So those two are two things, though, two qualities of really good speakers. The third quality is the one that I focused on a lot in my public speaking classes and in my career. And when I train people to be professional speakers, it's enthusiasm and energy. So when I wrote the first draft of the textbook for Fearless Presentations, I wrote that way back in like 2002. So it's been quite a while now. But I started chapter two with the secret to great presentations. And I'll kind of read you a quick excerpt of the Fearless Presentations book. This is the very first part, the very first couple of sentences in chapter two. It says, if you take only one piece of advice from this book, make sure that it's the pearl of wisdom in this chapter. If you focus on this one simple thing, the number of times that you say won't matter. If you focus on this one thing, your gestures and not knowing what to do with your hands won't matter. If you focus on this one simple thing, then the occasional loss of train of thought won't matter. In fact, if you focus on this one simple thing, you can break just about every rule that public speakers are supposed to abide by, and you'll still win over your audience. So this one simple rule has transformed countless mediocre speakers into good speakers, scores of good speakers into great speakers, and numerous great speakers into world-class speaker. That one simple rule that can make or break a speaker is enthusiasm. It's energy. So that statement is even more true today than it was back in 2002 when I first wrote it. And I mean, you can basically break every single rule in public speaking. And as long as you're excited about your topic, as long as you're speaking with passion, your audience is still going to love you. That Stanford study that I talked about before, it also confirmed what we identified about enthusiasm as well. So basically what Zandon's team found out was that the top 10% of authentic speakers were considered to be 1.3 times more trustworthy and 1.3 times more persuasive than the average communicator. And so basically that authenticity that they identified as one of the traits is made up of passion and warmth for the people that a speaker has when he or she is presenting. So that passion comes from exuding energy and enthusiasm. It's really key. I mean, if you look at this entire list of seven things and you just focus on that, it will be a game changer for you when you stand up to present. It's funny because one of the things that folks kind of tell me most often about my presentation style is they go, holy cow, you're so energetic. You know, a lot of times what will happen is, so maybe somebody's listening to the podcast. And, you know, obviously if I'm speaking to a microphone in a studio, I'm not going to be nearly as energetic as if I'm standing in front of 100 people or 1,000 people. And so my energy is much, much, much higher when I'm out speaking in person. But I'll give you an example. There was a woman that went to church with me for, I don't know, a decade or so, and she got laid off from her job, and I actually needed some help. So I offered a position for her to kind of help me do put some data into my computers and stuff like that way back. And she'd been working with me for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks or so, did a great job. And after being around my office for a while, though, she was kind of hearing all these great success stories. And she said, hey, you know, can I go to one of these classes? And so she and her husband, who both, you know, went to my church, ended up going to one of the sessions of my public speaking class. And they came up to me at lunch the first day and they said, holy cow, we had no idea. We've known you for a decade. We had no idea how great of a speaker you were. We had no idea how phenomenal you were, right? And so it's funny because that enthusiasm that we have is something that really sets us apart from the rest of the speakers, other people that are out there that are speaking. So keep that in mind. Enthusiasm, energy is really one of the key things. So the fourth quality that we're going to talk about today is the ability to use stories and examples to make your point. So when you're giving your presentation, being able to insert those examples, being able to insert those stories. Stories do a lot of fantastic things for you as a speaker. Stories can help you capture attention. They build rapport with your audience. In addition to that, they can help you reduce your nervousness pretty dramatically. As a speaking coach, I like to tell my students that you really can't overuse stories and examples. And in fact, there's a science behind telling stories. Back in 2016, an abstract was written about the effect of other abstracts, which was kind of funny, actually. So basically, this was a scientific article, a scientific publication that was written about how effective other public other scientific articles, right? So in the paper, the researchers found, and by the way, if you want a link to this, I put a link to this in the show notes. You can see you can read the entire thing if you want to. But the paper, the researchers found that when a scientist writes in a narrative form or a story format, that it's much easier to understand, so that those particular post or those particular abstracts are cited way more often than any other types of paper. Now, incidentally, I read through this thing word for word, and incidentally, the abstract itself isn't written in narrative form. So it is really difficult to understand. So you have to actually go very deep to find that. So I just thought that was kind of funny that that they were saying that the abstracts that are written in narrative form were much better, but they just decided to disregard it. And I think that's one of the things that happens to a lot of us when we're speaking in front of a group as well. We're doing a business presentation, and we think, God, you know, stories just aren't going to be as effective or helpful for this business audience. And the exact opposite is true. In fact, we spend a lot of time in our classes helping our participants get really, really good at using stories in their presentation. So why do we do that? I mean, it's actually really common sense, and it's an easy answer. When a presenter gets into a story, he or she will reduce their nervousness dramatically. The reason why that works, by the way, is because when we're trying to deliver a bunch of bullet points or we're trying to deliver a bunch of data, it's very challenging for us to remember every single thing that we want to say. So we're more likely to forget. It's going to help. It's going to increase our nervousness. We're going to have a disconnect from the audience because we're going to look around the audience and we're going to see the audience kind of tuning out and looking at their cell phones and all kinds of stuff like that. But when you get into a good story, all of a sudden all eyes are on you. They're captivated. And it's much easier to deliver a story because, especially if it's something from our own personal experience, because all we do is just play the video in our head of what happened at that moment and describe it to the audience. And so when we feel more self-confident, when that nervousness drops down, we're going to be more poised when we present, especially if we're feeling nervous at that moment. In addition, we're going to appear more enthusiastic in front of the group as well, because when we're telling a story, we can be much more passionate about that. We're much more passionate when we're talking about something from our experience, when we're telling a story, when we're relaying something important to our audience. So basically, this single thing, getting into stories and using stories as your examples, it's one of those things that will actually make those other three things that we've just covered, those other three qualities, come to the surface in a much more dramatic way. So if you tell stories, you're going to look more confident, you're going to feel more poised, your energy is going to skyrocket. So all four of those things will happen if you tell stories. So that's why we spend a lot of time, especially in the early part of the Fearless Presentations classes, getting people really, really good at telling stories. So number five, the fifth one, fifth quality of a good speaker is brevity. So a quote by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, says, be sincere, be brief, and then be seated. So there's a reason why there are hundreds of different inspirational quotes that have a focus on brevity. According to a study published by the National Academy of Science, the human brain can really only remember a max of about four items at a time. So the researchers that did this study were testing the hypothesis that the human brain only has a certain number of quote unquote slots to memorize things, especially in our working memory, our short-term memory. And so the study confirmed that most people will really only retain three or four items in that short-term working memory. So interestingly, though, for a portion of the study participants, as the number of items increase, the number of items that they asked them to remember in the study, as the number of items increased, their retention went down. So, it didn't give us the example of exactly what that was in the abstract, but I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, that the first time they were asked to memorize, eight things. And if there was a certain number of people that when they were asked to memorize eight things, they were able to remember four of those eight things. But then when they were asked to remember 12 things, they were only able to remember two or three, right? So the retention actually went down when the number of items went up. So the interesting thing about that is that, although that's a small percentage of the population where that happens, but the assumption that the researchers made was that there's a portion of the population that when they're given too much information at one sitting, they just shut down. They don't even try anymore. And so one of the things that sometimes will happen to me when I'm teaching a class or when I'm coaching a participant in one of my classes, I'll introduce this concept of, being brief and just only covering a few items very well. So basically the technique that I like to use is instead of covering a bunch of items in a cursory fashion where it's going to be more nerve-wracking for us to deliver and it's going to be challenging it's going to make us nervous. It will do a whole lot better as a presenter if we narrow the focus of what we're going to cover to just a few key concepts and cover those few key concepts really, really well. And one of the things that will happen when I first introduce this, before we've got a chance to really practice it in class, a lot of times folks, because this is so different than what they do in the real world, they'll say to me something like, Doug, well, my audiences are pretty intelligent though. So they're going to remember a lot more than the average person. Well, the study that I'm quoting here actually dispels that myth as well, because out of the entire study group, every single person that was in the study group, only a single person in the entire study group remembered all of the items on the list. When they got to the, I think it was, I can't remember the max number, but I think it was 10 items or whatever it was. It was only one person in the entire study group that could remember that. So if you think about it, the odds of your audience members as intelligent as they are being in that small of a percentage, less than 1% of the population, and every single person, if you got 30 people in your audience, every single one of those people being in that top 1% in memory, it's pretty low. There's the odds are at least one, if not, 99% of them are going to have a worse memory than that. So keep that in mind when you're designing your presentation. So this is one that you don't have to do a tremendous amount of studying to do. You just have to get really good practice at designing your presentations in a way that you're only focusing on a few key concepts. By the way, this is what we outline in the Fearless Presentations class. It's what's outlined on dozens and dozens of different blog posts on the fearlesspresentations.com website. Most of that stuff is free. So all you have to do is just go, if you have a presentation coming up and you want to kind of use this technique, go to an easy thing that you can do is go to fearlesspresentations.com and just type in the search bar, just type in the words speech creator, and it'll give you an outline of how to actually create one of these things from scratch. A very quick, easy way to design an outline so that you can design your speech better. So one of my favorite brevity quotes, by the way, of all time is by Winston Churchill. And if you've been listening to the podcast a while, you've probably heard me say this at least a couple of times because I just love it. Winston Churchill once said, "A good speech should be like a woman's skirt, long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest." And if you kind of keep that in mind, I know it's distasteful, but it's funny and it's interesting. But if you keep that in mind when you're designing your presentation, you'll do a whole lot better. All right, so number six, so we got two more left. So the sixth thing that will help you become a much better speaker or the quality of a good speaker is being audience focused. Now, initially in our classes, we help people reduce nervousness. That's one of the major things that we do. That's why we call it the Fearless Presentations class. We'll spend sometimes 3 or more hours in the first part of the class really helping people feel more comfortable, because we know if we can help them reduce the nervousness, a lot of the other things that hold us back from becoming professional speakers or charismatic speakers or persuasive speakers will kind of go away. So that's that's one of the major focuses in the early part of the class. But it actually doesn't take very long to help people reduce the nervousness. A lot of times folks think that that's going to be a really challenging part of the class. That's actually, we can do that in a couple hours. That's not a big deal. But in the latter part of the class, we focus a lot on being what I call audience focused. So most presenters make a big mistake at the beginning when they begin to design the presentation by focusing entirely on what they know about the subject. So I'm going to design a speech and I'm going to write this speech from scratch. So what the heck do I know about this topic? And then I start writing. In the olden days, we just write on legal pads, but now, you know, folks start with their PowerPoint slideshow and that kind of thing. That's a big mistake, because when we start designing our presentation that way, we're making the entire presentation about ourselves versus about what the audience really wants from the speech. So, it's just such a big mistake and sometimes this takes a little bit of time to kind of help folks that are in our classes kind of break that habit. Dr. Michelle Mauser, she wrote an article in Fast Company a while back where one of the quotes that she had in there was that she said, "Exceptional public speaking is never about the speaker. Yet it's easy to see yourself as the star of the presentation." I mean, if you think about it, what she's saying is really, really true, because since we're the center of attention, everybody's looking at us. We like, a lot of times, especially if we're a pretty good speaker, we sometimes start to see ourselves as being the star. However, she said that when you make the audience the star of your presentation, though, your reach is going to rise, your impact is going to increase, and your bottom line is going to blossom. So those are three really good things that happen when you really focus on the audience. And I totally agree with Dr. Mauser. When I'm sitting in an audience, this is not when I'm speaking, but let's say I'm in the audience listening to another speaker, I don't want the speaker to spend a ton of time talking about things that are only interesting to him or her. You know, I have my own problems. I got things that I'm trying to fix. And if the speaker can help me solve any one of those problems, guess what? I'm going to listen. And I suspect that you'll likely feel the same way. And guess what? Your audience is going to feel the same way too. So you really want to design your presentations from the audience's perspective. Get them involved. And the last one, the thing that I'm only going to spend just a little bit of time on this week, but I think we're going to do another session on this a little later, because this is just one of those things that really is, it's one of those things that we don't spend as much time on in the Fearless Presentations class. We spend an hour or so at the end of the class really focusing on this, just because there's really only so much time that we have in a classroom. But it's one of those things that's really, really important. And the better you get at this last one, the more people are going to see you as being a fantastic speaker. And so number seven, the quality of a good speaker, number seven, is what I call showmanship. I'm going to post this when we post the notes on the Fearless Presentations blog site. I think I'm going to put a link to a movie clip from Gladiator, what Russell Crowe from he's the general who, you know, is kind of put into captivity and turns into and has to be a gladiator and kill. Yeah. Anyway, but if you've seen the movie, it's a guy movie. Basically, it's a guy movie. Lots of blood and guts and stuff like that. But at one point, he goes out to perform. He goes out. And he ends up killing like four or five other gladiators in quick, easy fashion. And as their bodies are strewn on the Colosseum floor, he looks up in the audience. I think he throws his sword up to the person who's in charge of the festival or whatever, at the spectacle or whatever. And he looks up at the audience. He says, "Are you not entertained?" You know, it has really nothing to do with what we're talking about here, but it is a really funny part of an interesting, entertaining part of the movie. But it reminds me a lot of one of the things that we often forget when we're designing a speech or when we're putting together a presentation for folks. We forget that the purpose of the speech is not just to inform the audience, but it's also to entertain the audience. And we kind of forget about that. We think of our, if I just give them the information that they're looking for, then I will have done my job. Well, no, that's not true. In fact, I'll sometimes have class members that will come up to me during a class and they'll say, my audience is the people I'm speaking to, Doug, they don't really want the quote unquote fluff. They don't want the fluff. They just want just the facts. And I always laugh when folks kind of bring that up to me because it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so most of the time what I'll do at that point is I'll just follow up with a simple question and I'll say something like, other than a business presentation, we're going to take that out of the process here. Give me just one other area of your life where you pay closer attention to it if that activity is less entertaining, right? And I've never gotten an answer to that question. It's not true. We will always pay more attention to something if it's entertaining, right? NASCAR is one of the most popular sports. I mean, I'm not a racing fan, but to me, it's just kind of boring because it's just cars going around, a big oval. I think the thing that's most interesting about NASCAR is when they crash. It's, it's a spectacle, right? So you don't necessarily want that to happen in your presentations, but it's one of those things that people will pay more attention to the crash than they will to the actual racing, right? So keep that in mind when you're designing your presentations, is that you don't have to crash and burn. Basically, that's not what I'm saying here, is that you do have to have some entertainment value in your presentation. So the more that you can get the audience involved, the better that your visual aids are, the more stories and examples that you can put in. Those are all things that really lead to showmanship. And if you are looking for ways to add additional showmanship, if you think your presentations just aren't as interesting as you want them to be, then by all means, come to one of our classes. Come to one of the Fearless Presentations classes, because we've got them coming up in like 30 different cities around the world, just about every major city in the United States and Canada we're doing classes in. We've also got classes coming up in London and Dublin and Vienna, Austria. So we're all over. So if you have a presentation coming up and you really want to kind of bring it to life and add more showmanship, then go to fearlesspresentations.com, look for a class schedule and register for classes coming up in your area. If you don't see a class coming up in your area anytime soon, you can always just email me at podcasts@leadersinstitute.com and let me know what city that you're looking at taking a class in, and if we get enough people in any city, we'll be happy to kind of come there. So keep that in mind. So thanks a lot for being a part of the Fearless Presentations podcast. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Fearless Presentations podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast program that you use, make sure to do that. And also leave us a comment. One of the things that I really enjoy about both the podcast and the classroom sessions is getting that feedback from the people who went through my classes, or they've listened to a couple of podcasts, and when they shoot me an email or leave a comment on iTunes, it really helps us. It helps not only other people find us, but it also helps me create better content for you. So make sure and subscribe, leave some comments, and share it with some of your friends. And we'll see you next week on the Fearless Presentations podcast.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.